He had dropped his ship into a grazing orbit around the jagged, striated body of nickel iron where Fuchs had left one of his transceivers. His navigator was still sweating and wide-eyed with apprehension. His pale-blonde Scandinavian second-in-command had warned him several times that they were dangerously close to crashing into the rock. But Harbin wanted to be so close that an approaching ship would not spot him. He wished this chunk of metal was porous, like the carbonaceous rock where one of Fuchs's other transceivers had been found. The crew there had simply detached their habitation module from the rest of their ship and buried it under a loose layer of rubble. Then the remainder of the ship, crewed only by a pilot and navigator, flew out of range. If Fuchs showed up there, all he would see would be an innocent pile of dirt. A Trojan horse, Harbin thought grimly, that would disgorge half a dozen armed troops while calling all of Harbin's armada to close the trap. The Scandinavian was clearly unhappy orbiting mere meters from the scratched and pitted surface of the asteroid.
"We are running the danger of having the hull abraded by the dust that hovers over the rock," she warned Harbin.
He looked into her wintry blue eyes. "So like my own," he thought. "Our Viking ancestors must have invaded my village some time in the past."
"It's dangerous," she said sharply.
Harbin made himself smile at her.
"Match our orbit to the rock's intrinsic spin. If Fuchs comes poking around here, I don't want him to see us until it's too late for him to get away."
She started to protest, but Harbin cut her off with an upraised hand.
"Do it," he said.
Clearly unhappy, she turned and relayed his order to the navigator.
"Let's break for lunch," said Doug Stavanger. The others around the conference table nodded and pushed their chairs back. The tension in the room cracked. One by one they got to their feet, stretched, took deep breaths. Stavanger heard vertebrae pop. Lunch had been laid on in another conference room down the hall. As the delegates filed out into the corridor, Stavanger touched Dieterling's arm, detaining him. "Have we accomplished anything?" he asked the diplomat. Dieterling glanced at the doorway where his two nephews stood waiting for him. Then he turned back to Stavanger. "Not a little, I think." "At least Humphreys and Pancho were talking civilly to each other," Stavanger said, with a rueful smile. "Don't underestimate the benefits of civility," said Dieterling. "Without it, nothing can be done." "So?" With a heavy shrug, Dieterling answered, "It's clear that the crux of the problem is this man Fuchs. Humphreys certainly wants him out of the way. As long as he is rampaging out there in the belt, there can be no peace." Stavanger shook his head. "But Fuchs started his rampage, as you call it, in reaction to the violence that Humphreys's people began."
"That makes no difference now,"
Dieterling said, dropping his voice almost to a whisper.
"We can get Humphreys and Miss Lane to let bygones be bygones and forget the past. No recriminations, no acts of vengeance. They are willing to make a peaceful settlement."
"And stick to it, do you think?"
"Yes, I'm certain of it. This war is becoming too expensive for them. They want it ended."
"They can end it this afternoon if they want to."
"Only if Fuchs is stopped," Dieterling said. "He is the wild card, the terrorist who is beyond ordinary political control."
Stavanger nodded glumly. "He's got to be stopped then. Damn it."
Humphreys stepped into the washroom, relieved himself of a morning's worth of coffee, then washed up and popped another tranquilizing pill. He thought of them as tranquilizers, even though he knew they were much more than that. As he stepped out into the corridor, Amanda came out of the ladies' room, his breath caught in his throat, despite the pill. She was dressed in a yellow pantsuit that seemed faded from long use, yet in Humphreys's eyes she glowed like the sun. No one else was in sight. The others must have all gone into the room where lunch was laid out. "Hello, Amanda," he heard himself say. Only then did he see the cold anger in her eyes. "You're determined to kill Lars, aren't you?" she said flatly. Humphreys licked his lips before replying. "Kill him? No. Stop him. That's all I want, Amanda. I want him to stop the killing, which you started. That doesn't matter anymore. He's the problem now. You won't rest until you've killed him." "Not..." he had to swallow hard before he could continue. "Not if you'll marry me." He had expected her to be surprised, but her eyes did not flicker. The expression on her utterly beautiful face did not change one iota. She simply turned and headed up the corridor, away from him. Humphrey started to go after her, but then he heard Stavanger and Dieterling coming up the hall behind him. "Don't make an ass of yourself in front of them," he told himself sternly. "Let her go, for now. At least she didn't say no."
As Fuchs studied the image of asteroid 38-4002, Noden ducked through the hatch and stepped into the bridge. Fuchs heard him ask the pilot if the long-range scan showed any other ships in the area. "None," said the pilot. What could raise a lump on a beanbag collection of pebbles? Fuchs asked himself for the dozenth time. Nautilus was approaching the asteroid at 1/6 G. They would have to start a braking maneuver soon if they were going to establish an orbit around it. Wishing he had a full panoply of sensors to play across the asteroid's surface, Fuchs noted again that there were several noticeable craters on its surface, but none of them had the raised rims that formed when a boulder crashed into a solid rock. No. This is a collection of nodules, he thought, and the only way to build a blister like that is for something to push the pellets up into a mound. Something. Then it hit him. Or someone. He turned in his chair and looked up at Noden. Warm up laser number one, he commanded. Noden's big eyes flashed, but he nodded silently and left the bridge. Turning back to the image of the approaching asteroid, Fuchs reasoned, if something natural pushed up that mound, then there should be a depression next to it, from where the pebbles were scooped up. But there isn't. Why not? Because something is buried under that mound. Because someone dug a hole in that porous pile of rubble and buried something in it. What? Cut our approach velocity in half, he said to the pilot. The Asian complied, wordlessly. Several minutes later, Noden called from the cargo bay. Laser number two is ready. Number two? Fuchs replied sharply. What happened to number one? Its coolant lines are being flushed. Routine maintenance. Get it online, Fuchs snapped. Get number three online, too. Yes, sir. Fuchs could hear Noden speaking in rapid dialect to someone else down in the cargo bay. Slave number two to my console, Fuchs ordered. He began to reconfigure his console with fingertip touches on its main display screen. By the time he had finished, the laser was linked. He could run it from the bridge. He put the asteroid on screen and focused on that suspicious mound of rubble. He saw the red dot of the aiming laser sparkling on the dark, pebbly ground and walked it to the middle of the mound. Then, with a touch of a finger, he fired the high-power laser. Its infrared beam was invisible to his eyes, but Fuchs saw the ground cascade into a splash of heat, a miniature fountain of red-hot lava erupting, spraying high above the asteroid's surface. His face set in a harsh scowl, Fuchs held the cutting laser's beam on the spewing geyser of molten rock. 10 seconds, 15, 20. The mound erupted. Half a dozen space-suited figures scurried in all directions like cockroaches startled out of their nest, stumbling across the rough surface of the asteroid. I knew it, Fuchs shouted. The three Asians on the bridge turned toward him. Noden called from the cargo bay. They were waiting for us to pick up the transceiver. Fuchs ignored them all. He swung the laser toward one of the figures. The man had tripped and sprawled clumsily in the minuscule gravity of the little asteroid. Then, when he tried to get up, he pushed himself completely off the ground. Now he floated helplessly, arms and legs flailing. Fuchs walked the laser beam toward him, watched its molten path as it burned across the asteroid's gravelly surface. Waiting to trap me, were you? He muttered. You wanted to kill me? Now, see what death is like. For an instant, he wondered who was inside that spacesuit. What kind of a man becomes a mercenary soldier, a hired killer? Is he like my own crew? The cast-offs, the abandoned, so desperate they'll do anything, follow anyone who can give them hope that they'll live to see another day? Fuchs watched the spacesuited figures struggling, arms and legs pumping frantically as he drifted farther off the asteroid. He certainly had no experience in microgravity, Fuchs saw, and his comrades are doing nothing to help him. You're going to die alone, he said silently to the spacesuited figure. Yet, he turned off the cutting laser.
His hand had touched the screen icon that deactivated